Hello, I'm Mark McClellan. I'm the director of the Engelberg Center for Healthcare Reform here at the Brookings Institution, and I'd like to thank all of you for joining us in the first of a series of webinars on the implementation of unique device identifiers, or UDIs. We're very pleased to be hosting the webinar today and very pleased that so many of you could join us. There are some important opportunities right now associated with UDI implementation that have important implications for healthcare systems and providers, and we look forward to an ongoing dialogue and opportunity to keep all of you informed and hear from you about some of these issues related to UDI implementation, not just today, but going forward. I do want to spend a few minutes before we get started on where we are now and how we got here. As I think all of you know, the United States does not have a standardized identification system for medical devices that could enable quick identification not only of the brand of a device, but a specific model or other specific features that distinguish a device used for important medical care activities from others. While stakeholders involved in different stages of the medical life cycle have taken some very important steps for identifying devices, including manufacturers, including some of the users of these devices, it's not as comprehensive of a system as many would like to see. That makes communication across stakeholders and different stages of use challenging. The device identification, as I mentioned, may not be sufficiently specific to allow detailed tracking over the entire life cycle. And that's not to say that the UDI is going to solve all these problems overnight, but the implementation of a UDI system does present an important opportunity to build on some of this important work and this expanding work that's taking place in different parts of the healthcare system to get to more comprehensive tracking and evidence development capabilities. So in response to growing calls for the development of such a widespread, consistent UDI system for the United States, in 2007, as part of the FDA Amendments Act enacted by Congress that year, Congress mandated that FDA create a UDI system to enable tracking and identification of medical devices. Earlier this year, in July, the FDA issued a proposed rule for UDI implementation, and this is based on a lot of discussion, dialogue about UDI implementation since the congressional mandate was enacted. And this proposed rule is now available for comment. And if you haven't done it yet, you still have a couple more days. The comment period ends on November 7th. And the rule itself outlines the public health objectives, the timeline, the labeling requirements, some important exemptions and exceptions associated with UDI, really a whole set of key issues related to the initial phases, at least, of UDI implementation. This includes components of the UDI, how it's technically constructed, how the UDI should be generated and displayed on medical devices or their packaging, and the role of an accompanying global UDI database that FDA is supporting that would link the UDI to some important information about the device itself. With a standardized UDI system in place, as is envisioned here, this is one in which medical devices would get a single unique code, the ability to unambiguously identify devices should make possible some important benefits. This includes giving patients access to important information about their medical devices. It includes potentially facilitating the longitudinal tracking of device safety and effectiveness. It includes facilitating the rapid identification of medical devices in the field in the case of recalls and effective communication about those recalls. Again, these are activities where there is much underway already in the absence of a UDI, but where the intent of UDI implementation is to provide better support for these and potentially other public health benefits. Now, many of these enhanced capabilities that could arise from UDI implementation directly benefits healthcare systems and providers, and that's the point of the webinar today. We hope to explore the operational, the financial, the clinical value associated with implementation. This will also give us a chance to discuss, or at least to begin to discuss, some of the challenges and issues and considerations that need to be taken into account from the standpoint of healthcare systems and providers in moving forward on UDI implementation. So that's a little bit of an overview of the big picture and where we're going today. Before we begin the substance of the webinar, I'd like to go over a few housekeeping items. First, and importantly, we encourage you to submit questions throughout the presentations today. You can do this online at the Q&A tab on the top of the screen. As you think of the questions, they'll be put into a queue, and when we get to the section of the webinar for comments and questions and discussions, we will get to that that comment or question from you. In addition to commenting when we have those opportunities on the webinar, which we really want to encourage, we also want to encourage good sound for everyone. So please make sure that, for now at least, your microphone on your phone is muted. You can do this either by pressing your phone's mute button or by pressing *6. And then when it comes time to ask a question or make a comment, you can unmute your line by pressing *7. So that's *6 to mute, *7 to unmute. If you have any technical questions along the way, you can call our conference support team at Level 3 Conferencing. Their number is on the slide here at 888-447-1119. We have two main presentations coming today. One is from Laurel Yunk, the Vice President for Supply Chain at Kaiser Permanente. The second is from Natalia Wilson, the Co-Director of Health Sector Supply Chain Research Consortium for the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State. They're going to provide a more detailed overview of how implementation may be moving forward and some of the issues for healthcare systems and providers from their perspectives. But first, to start us off with a little bit more background on UDI implementation, I want to turn now to Greg Daniel. Greg is a fellow and managing director here at the Engelberg Center. Greg and his team oversee our work on UDI and other issues related to biomedical innovation and regulation here at the center. Greg?
Okay, thank you, Mark. On this next slide, what we're trying to show you is where we are today and where we would like to be after UDIs are successfully implemented. So starting on the far left, although some manufacturers have begun voluntarily labeling their devices with UDIs, medical devices are not uniformly labeled with these unique device identifiers. The recently released proposed rule by the FDA does provide a number of proposals which, if adopted in the final rule, will deal directly with UDI development, laying the groundwork for UDI inclusion on devices and device labels by manufacturers and labelers as appropriate, and ensuring that accompanying device information will be made available to the public through the global UDI database. While the FDA's proposed rule is an important step forward, it focuses on UDI development by manufacturers. However, in order for us all to recognize the wide variety of uses and benefits of UDIs, including the ones Mark mentioned, UDI implementation by a variety of stakeholders, including providers, will need to happen. But in order to do that, there must be routine capture of UDIs in electronic data sources through incorporation into the data collection fields and workflows, as indicated here. Once UDIs are being appropriately recorded and stored within the clinical and administrative electronic data, the development of appropriate methods and data infrastructure for ultimately allowing UDIs to enable the benefits of tracking devices will also need to be developed. And although many of the UDI implementation challenges will be technical in nature, it is also equally important that all stakeholders see value in UDI implementation and commit to doing their part to achieve full implementation. With this in mind, Brookings has been working in collaboration with the Food and Drug Administration, as well as Chickasaw Nation Industries, and will be working to develop a roadmap, if you will, for providing stakeholders with a path forward to successfully implement UDIs. tackling both motivational and technical challenges. To take some of the key barriers that successful implementation may face during our initial work, Brookings has assembled a work group of expert stakeholders with interests that span the medical device lifecycle to advise on issues related to the implementation of UDIs, to explore potential strategies for resolving them, and also to identify topics in need of further exploration. The proposed initial focus of this work group is shown here in blue. Over the course of the first year that Brookings will be working on this, we plan to convene 3 expert workshops on selected issues and possible barriers to UDI implementation, which have been identified by the work group, and that would benefit from more in-depth consideration. The first of these expert workshops has already occurred and was held on October 15th, and this particular expert workshop focused on opportunities and challenges associated with capturing UDIs in administrative payer claims data. Brookings will also host 2 webinars to engage with broader audiences regarding UDI implementation, the first of which is today's webinar. In conducting these activities, Brookings hopes to begin an important conversation around successful UDI implementation with stakeholders from across the medical device lifecycle, weighing in to explore the potential promise of UDI implementation, identify the key challenges, and develop appropriate strategies for successful implementation. Input from a variety of stakeholders brought together through each of these activities, each with their own piece of the medical device lifecycle, can offer different but important perspectives and help inform the more complete development of the UDI implementation roadmap. Today, as we begin to explore the value of implementation for providers and healthcare systems, it's important to note that this is one important piece of a larger picture in achieving the broader value of implementation. And we will only benefit from full implementation if each stakeholder helps put UDI in place and fully develops it in their own sector. None of the stakeholders will benefit from just partial implementation. Only with full implementation can each stakeholder begin to reap the intended benefits of fully integrated, fully implemented UDIs. And with that, I'll turn the presentation back to Mark.
Thanks for that overview, Greg, and just want to emphasize that the goal here is to get to effective implementation. The UDI is the law. It is moving forward on product labelings we'll hear more about. But as Greg said, only if this is a useful set of tools for everyone in the healthcare system will we be able to capture these full benefits. Just the label on the device packaging isn't enough. So we're going to, in this series of webinars, help support getting from here to there. We're starting that now with turning to Laurel Yunk, who is going to provide some thoughts on the operational value of UDI implementation for healthcare systems and providers. And Laurel, if you're with us, please make sure to press *7 to unmute, and please go ahead.
Great. Can you all hear me?
Yes. Thanks, Laurel.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you all today about how critically important we at Kaiser Permanente feel UDI is, and hopefully you'll find some value in what we're doing, but we just see it's so vital because we truly see it as a true business imperative, not just a regulatory requirement. So with that said, I thought where I would start is just kind of letting you know a little bit about Kaiser Permanente. We're pretty big, as you can see, one of the largest U.S. not-for-profit healthcare systems, but we have a very big network, and we are an integrated delivery system. We have both the health plan or the insurance side, we have the hospital operations, and we have our medical doctors or our physicians, if you will, as part of our organization. And so we are quite large, and that certainly has some benefits to it, but it also creates some challenges. And the types of problems that we face are very similar to everyone else. We just have a few more zeros behind the decimal points, if you will. So we're very adamant about the kinds of change that we need to make in order to really be competitive and to be able to provide the best care as we go forward, particularly into the coming years regarding healthcare reform.
Hey, Laurel, if you don't mind my interrupting for a second, you are coming through loud. Just there's a little bit of fuzziness on the sound on your end. I'm not sure if you're on a speakerphone or if there's anything else to be done about it, but we are hearing you. Just want to make sure that the sound is as optimal as possible.
Okay, well, let me come off the speakerphone. Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
Okay, we'll do it that way. Great. So where we always want to start in terms of from a supply chain perspective, given I head up supply chain, is we've started a full supply chain transformation initiative here at Kaiser Permanente, and we start with just recognition that it truly is integral to patient care delivery. The products that we buy, the services that we provide are really important. If we're not able to do that well, then the true mission that we're here about of really delivering the utmost in care just can't happen. But it's also a reminder to all of us of our responsibility to make sure that that happens well and really allow our patients and particularly our caregivers to have what they need when they need it, but really allow our caregivers to focus on patient care and not have to spend a whole lot of time worrying about their products and their supplies. So when we take a look at kind of where we are today, just from the perspective of a day in the life of a particular caregiver, one of the things that we, I think, would all agree is that in the should-be world, the clinicians and the people who came here to treat our patients really should have a complete focus on the patient or the member. And that really means making sure that supplies are always there when they're needed, that there should be no risk of expired product, that when they go to get something that it's good product, it's not recalled product. And more importantly, that they're always assured that indeed the products that we're using in the service of our care truly are high-quality products that we have good data behind and we know are providing the best care possible. Unfortunately, though, if we look at kind of how things are today, and again, I don't know that Kaiser Permanente is dramatically different from any other healthcare systems out there. We believe that the delivery of care that we provide is second to none. And we've invested heavily on the care side of our house. We have one of the world's largest electronic medical record systems. We have an app that allows you to connect with your doctor, make appointments, see your lab results, do all of those things. But on the back office processes, if you will, as we call them, this is kind of the experience that many of our caregivers have today that we're working very hard and very quickly to fix. There's a lot of hunting and gathering today. Clinicians spend a fair amount of time trying to find the supplies that they need, making sure that they're the right kinds of supplies, in some cases having to make do when some supplies might be there, because we do have situations where there are lots of inventory. So we have many of some products, but yet we have not enough of others, and some of that is tied to our ability to manage supplies and know exactly what we have. There's always a constant vigilance for expired product, and that's because we're not really able to track our products all the way down to the point of care. Most of the items, as they get closer to the care setting, are expensed, and so as we look at our ERP system, we're able to kind of see some things in a perpetual, but they tend to be the lower-valued type inventory sitting in a stock room. And those things, the higher-cost items, and probably even those more important to the service of care, really have been expensed. So we may know when we purchase them, but we don't know exactly whether they're still there, if they're still on the shelf, whether they've been used. So a lot of that requires a lot of vigilance on behalf of our caregivers to make sure that the products that they're using are good products. Even in the recall side of the house, it's very manual. We have many, many people dedicated to, when the notices go out, to go out and scan the shelves and to go out and find the product and make sure that we don't have impaired product in our supply chain processes. And we do a good job of that today, but it is extremely labor-intensive, and we believe through the use of UDI and the rest of our supply chain transformation that we can make a major improvement in that in ensuring that truly a bad product is coming out of our supply chains as quickly as possible. And lastly, and then probably most importantly, is the total value of the product is not always evident or known. Many of our caregivers don't even know what the cost of the products that they're using are. So how do we get to a place where they're much more cognizant of it? We truly know that the products that we're using are delivering the best in terms of outcomes and comparative effectiveness. And that's ultimately where we want to get to, is creating that awareness and that visibility and fixing these processes that will truly allow us to bring our full focus to bear on really delivering the highest care possible. So just as I always like to start with a couple of interesting fun facts, if you will. We've just basically gone through and done a number of baselinings across all of our operating rooms and our medical centers across KP. And what we have found is that on average, in any one of our typical OR cores and suites, is we'll have anywhere from 35,000 to 40,000 unique SKUs in the OR.
And we have a we've had to do this through physicals. We really are only able to identify what exactly what we have in our ORs once a year. And again, I think that's pretty consistent with other healthcare systems. But through that data, we've been able to kind of glean some interesting facts. The other one I'll call out, too, is I mentioned recalls earlier, and this is an increasing challenge for all of us, is in 2011, we processed over 1,200 recalls, and we're on track to beat that number in 2011 we processed over 1,200 recalls. And again, as I mentioned, very, very manual. So trying to just find them in the OR, if you will, across these 35 or 40,000 SKUs is, again, a very labor-intensive type process. The 38% number I want you to remember is, as part of our transformation initiative, we've gone out and we've physicaled everything just in the last couple of months. And one of the things we've done that we haven't done in the past is we've actually, as part of our observations, is we've tried to capture, does the product contain a UDI, if you will. In our case, we were looking for a GS1 compliant barcode at the unit of use and something that we could scan. And what we found is that 38% of the products sitting in the OR are of that type, one that we're actually able to scan, we're able to identify uniquely via the GS1 system, and have more electronic connections to this inventory, if you will. And for us, when we think about how critical it is to know where our product is, that's just not good enough, and we really, really need that number to improve dramatically. And I'll talk a little bit about why that's so critically important to us all. But I'll come back to that 38% here near the end, but quite eye-opening. So in terms of kind of our supply vision, and I put supply in quotes here because we think of it not just as a supply chain department, if you will, but really how do we manage our supplies in their total life cycle and get aligned around what the process needs to look like, is we've created this vision. Which really for all of us starts at the point of care. Whereas most supply chains have kind of been pushed, how do we push as many materials in as we possibly can, we want to change that perspective and drive everything from the point of care. And I show barcodes here, and that's to represent the fact that we need to be able to capture the usage of our products at the time that we're using them in care. And again, this is where the UDI becomes so critical because it's going to drive everything else that we do from a business process perspective. So we want to capture it at the point that the product is being used, and then we can do a number of very interesting things with it and a number of very high-value things with it. Is with that usage, we can then drive a very efficient supply chain, represented here by OneLink, which is our internal name for PeopleSoft, our ERP system. Is we can drive a very demand-triggered supply chain to make sure we only are bringing in as we use something. So as opposed to caregivers today perhaps putting out e-reps when they think something is gone, we'll be tracking that through our usage, and we can do a much better job of forecasting, planning, setting the PAR levels, and allowing us to really manage a very efficient and effective supply chain. That includes recall, being able to track products down to usage and do that electronically and be able to scan our products that are sitting in the OR on the shelf so that we have visibility as well will allow us to more quickly and make sure that we can totally assess getting product out when we need to. Probably more importantly, though, too, even beyond the supply chain efficiencies, where we see tremendous value in the future, and I know Natalia will be speaking more about later on, is with that usage information, we want to make sure it gets connected to the medical records here represented by our KP Health Connect system. We use Epic. And once we really begin to associate more of our product information with our patients, with patient information, we can do a number of, again, very interesting things. One, we can begin to get that information into more things like registries or other databases for comparative effectiveness and surveillance. We can really begin to identify whether there are product quality issues and be able to do that, hopefully, in a more proactive way. And I have that represented here by the recent DePuy hip recall. Is we want to be able to do that on a much more systematic way and, again, hopefully a much more proactive way. But more importantly, in the future, we hope to be able to have true quantitative and qualitative information on being able to assess is one manufacturer's product better than another and is a pharmaceutical solution better than a mechanical one or a surgical one. And that's really what's going to feed our sourcing process in the future, is really understanding the outcomes of our products in the service of care, whether they're reducing infections, reducing surgical times, reducing inpatient stay times, whatever those other outcomes might be that are really critical as we look at the total cost of our supplies throughout the process. And in the future, we may very well buy something that's more expensive because we know that indeed it has offsets in that total cost continuum to make it a much more effective from a total cost of procedure perspective. And that's really where we kind of close the loop here of once we're really capturing all the information about our products and associating those with to our patients and to our physicians, is we really will get good at kind of cost per care, or cost per case per physician. So we really begin to get an idea of what the cost of our procedures are, but also in that comparative effectiveness perspective, being able to also understand the quality of those products as well. So hopefully having the full set of the equation there. And then lastly, the other arrow that we show, too, is to kind of close the loop on making sure that, indeed, that usage information is very tightly tied to our charge masters, making sure that we're reimbursed for the products that we're due reimbursement for, which is going to become even more critically important, again, as we're all financially challenged in these coming years under healthcare reform. And that can also be better information into our claim system and all kinds of things. So this is the vision at Kaiser that we're aligning ourselves around, and our supply chain processes are being designed to fit into this process, knowing that we don't own and run all of these things. Obviously, that bottom half of the vision, if you will, is very clinically driven. We will never tell our clinicians what to use, but we will help facilitate some of the discussions and hopefully facilitate some of their analyses and being able to look at product quality and other attributes like that. So with that as the vision, we actually have moved into kind of a piloting stage across our medical facilities, and we've actually done proof of concept sites at four of our major medical facilities, two in Northern California, two in Southern California. And we've picked a subset of service lines to allow us to kind of begin to do this in a reasonable way and in a fairly short order way. But what we've really done is gone in, deployed a point of use system that allows us to scan product at the point of care, and we've started in the OR and in interventional radiology. And we've defined the processes both from a supply chain perspective that allow us, again, as I mentioned in the vision, to take that usage information, drive an effective supply chain, reset our PAR levels. With that usage information, we can get very good at setting the right kinds of safety stock levels. That will not only improve in stock conditions, making sure product is there when our clinicians need it, but also allow us to reduce our inventories, and I'll show you the results from those concept sites here in just a second. But probably the bigger piece in all of this was standardizing our processes in terms of how we do supply chain, how we manage supply chain, but probably even more exciting from our perspective is it's really beginning to close the gap between supply chain and clinical care. So one of the pieces where we know we need to get closer to our clinicians, and that we'll be standardizing as we go forward, is we're actually going to have supply chain manage the pick list within the procedure card and make sure that those items are correct, which will allow us a lot of the other systematic reporting that we would like to do to be able to facilitate discussions in the future about what we use and how standard or not standard we may be. And we believe that's going to have some pretty significant impacts on both understanding the outcome of care that comes from those choices, but also on the financial side of allowing us to really take a look at, do we have more opportunities for standardization of our products? Are they on contract? Are they not? And really kind of driving, some pretty significant financial outcome for us, as well as maintaining that high quality level. So we've conducted these four pilots, if you will, and we've completed those probably over about a 6 to 8 week time frame. We've just completed them just recently. And in terms of results, what you can see here is some of the high-level KPIs that we set out for ourselves through that process. Is one, we wanted to look at inventory reduction. But as you see, the first one really is about kind of service improvement. So how do we make sure that, indeed, more of our product is available? Because we certainly can cut inventories by throwing service to the curb. So by doing this process and being able to identify those products uniquely has allowed us to not only improve in stock, so we've gone from a 33% improvement all the way up to a 97% improvement of making sure product is available. And at the same time, in that 6 to 8 week times, we've been able to reduce inventories from a low of 9% to a high of 28%. And we've identified greater than 20% inventory reductions across all sites that we'll eventually get to before year's end. But in terms of the pilot timeline, what you see here are the actualized results. By also capturing the point of use information, we were able to take a look at what our true kind of contract compliance is, particularly at that point of care from the products that we actually use. And we saw from the low end a 3 percentage point improvement opportunity, and even on the top end, which we still believe is quite conservative, is a 6 percentage point improvement. And for us, that means millions and millions of dollars to be able to hopefully redirect into care and the improvement of our care. And then importantly, too, are the qualitative aspects. So we did surveys before we did the pilots with our clinicians on their satisfaction of their supply chains and our ability to manage product, and we've done that subsequently with the conclusion of our proof of concept pilots as well. And what we found is clinicians are much, much happier, too. They really didn't come here to manage supply chains. They just want product there, so what they came here to do, which is to focus on patients, is what they can put their full time and effort behind, so that we can more effectively manage recalls and we can more effectively manage things behind the scenes such that they don't have to worry about whether or not a given product is the right product or is a high-quality product that can be used on our patients. So overall, we're very pleased with the results from our proof-of-concept sites. And it really leads to kind of just a couple of slides that I have here, why we believe UDI is so critical. The unique identification of our devices is so important to us. And it comes across in a couple of different dimensions, if you will. We start with patient safety. You know, it is about how can we ensure the safest care possible. And that's at the center of everything we do. The patient is at the core of what we do all the time. We want to make sure that, indeed, they're getting the safest care and the best care possible. We believe there's huge benefits around supply chain efficiencies, and I'll talk a little bit more about those in a bit more detail about just how do we become more efficient and how do we drive cost structures lower such that we truly can meet the upcoming needs of healthcare reform and treat more patients and treat being able to provide access to a much larger population while at the same time understanding that our reimbursements will be at a much more lower level. So how do we do that cost effectively? But there's also big benefits that we see into it for the suppliers as well, and in terms of supplier integration. How can we work better with suppliers to lower costs? And I'll talk a little bit about some of those in just a second. Fraud and waste. One of the questions we have is, were all of the products that we've bought truly used in the service of our patients? By not being able to have transparency all the way down to the point of care, we don't know from all the products that we bought, did indeed they all get used in care, or did some of them walk away? How much of it is expired? We kind of have disjointed information even around expirations, but there's huge opportunities here to really fill out that equation of what did we buy, what's still sitting on the shelves, what did we use on our patients, and if that equation doesn't equal itself out, we know that we've got supply leakage somewhere, and so we'll want to be able to track that down. And then lastly, too, is where we really begin to get, I think, at even more of the strategic and higher valued opportunities in the future, and what UDI really enables is how do we truly get at product and practice standardization? How do we minimize variation to really ensure that we're getting much better outcomes in the delivery of care? So I'll go through each one of these really quickly. But from a patient safety, I've talked about kind of a faster, more efficient recall management. We believe it will also allow us to prevent the introduction of counterfeit product into our supply chains, that can quickly be identified and make sure that we don't have that happening. But probably the most important thing that comes out of this aspect is really making sure that our nurses can focus on the delivery of care, that when they go to get product, they know they can use it, it's good product, and indeed all of their time and effort can be making sure that our members and our patients get the very best care possible. And that's all about ensuring that the right product is used on the right patient. I talked a lot about the supply chain efficiencies in all of this, replenishments really being driven by actual usage so that indeed we're only bringing things in as we need it. We hear constantly about space challenges. We don't have enough space. But to give you an example, in one of our proof of concept sites, in the operating room, they were constantly complaining about we don't have enough space. We've got products stacked to the rafters, if you will. We really need to kind of expand. And by doing the PAR optimization, capturing the usage, helping us better manage our inventories, as you saw in some of the earlier charts, we were able to reduce their inventory by 28%. and it was visible. You could actually see, and the CEO of the hospital himself commented on just how dramatically you could visibly see this improvement in terms of the right kinds of products being available and it not having to be stacked to the rafters, if you will. So huge opportunities there. It's all about setting PAR levels. We've also shown in our proof of concept sites by setting the right kind of PAR levels to maximize the service levels, but also looking at economic order quantities, we can dramatically improve productivity. So again, as an example in our proof of concept sites, not only were we able to reduce inventories and improve service levels, but we were able to improve the productivity of our supply chain folks by almost 40%. And that also cut the number of orders in half to our distributor, which is going to allow us to have a much more efficient and effective relationship with them and hopefully lower cost as well. But the benefits really do cascade. Let's see what else. Oh, and then lastly, where we're also looking forward to in the future is really beginning to take usage and the procedure cards and the pick list in the procedure cards and link that to schedules will allow us to really begin to do some forward looking so that we truly can bring products in as we need it, but also be being proactive about making sure we have the products we're going to need in the future. But we believe we can even drive even more efficiencies in our supply chain by linking all of this information through our schedules and using that forward-looking information to help us. So from a supplier perspective, one of the things we're not able to do today is do an effective integration with suppliers on demand planning and forecasting, how much product they should expect. All they see is orders every day and lots of them. And if we're really looking at the variation caused by actual demand as we use it, I think we're going to find that variation is much, much less than the orders that they're seeing. So we believe through forecasting and the rest, we can better integrate with suppliers, help them level load their manufacturing. We can reduce costs. Consignments, there's a tremendous amount of consigned inventory in our facilities, and we know that's hugely inefficient for suppliers who are carrying billions of dollars in consigned inventories today. By linking all of this information and truly being able to identify products, we believe we can help manage that and help them reduce their costs, particularly as they're looking at medical device tax increases through healthcare reform. We believe we can get at earlier detection of product quality issues to the supplier as well as throughout our system. And then lastly, two huge opportunities for SKU rationalizations. Which has impact not only for us, but for our suppliers, too. If we can help rationalize the SKUs for them, it makes their manufacturing and all of the rest more efficient, and it just brings benefits to everyone. So we do see this as critical of being able to provide benefits for all of our partners in the supply chain. As I mentioned on fraud and waste, not only will we be able to hopefully prevent the introduction of counterfeit products, but have seen some industry estimates there of supply leakage, which is pretty significant. And when you start multiplying some of that out for a healthcare system the size of Kaiser Permanente, it's really significant for us. So we're real interested to get a handle on is, are we seeing that kind of potential waste out there or not? Are we managing? Do we have the right controls of our supply chain? Reduction of expired product and the level of effort to make sure that we don't have expired product is pretty significant, as well as just excess waste and handling. With all of the products that we bring in, if we're not being efficient and effective about it, we, again, are just wasting resources, really looking at it from a Lean Six Sigma perspective that really can be redeployed to the more effective use of delivery of our mission, if you will. And then lastly, from a product and practice standardization, we really do think ultimately this is where the huge value is going to come from, really allowing us to enable comparative effectiveness. So how can we really look at the quality of products, do really good kind of product surveillance? And again, in a system of our size, we have the opportunity to gather a lot of information about products very quickly. And how do we really bring it to its full use and analysis of really understanding kind of what that combination of patient data, outcomes data, and product data allows us to understand about the products that we're using. And probably more, as importantly, too, is it really allows us to get, from a sourcing perspective, beyond just the price. So here at Kaiser Permanente, we have a tremendous a number of products on national contracts. We have a national product council structure that's chaired by two physicians, and we have sourcing standards teams under each of the major commodities underneath that again, are physician-led and sourcing-supported. And so as we make product selections from a contract view, we are able to make that as a Kaiser decision with input from all of our key clinicians in our regions. And we've done a really good job in terms of leveraging our size and our volumes, but now where we need to go to is really, again, getting costs out of the entire system, both in terms of our integrations with our suppliers, but also the usage of those products, as we mentioned, in terms of really what their impact on care is. And is a new product really worth the new product premium or not? It may be, if we can truly prove that indeed it's able to provide other outcomes or improved outcomes in that delivery of care. And then finally, too, where we're really driving to is even as we look at SKU rationalization and making sure that things are on contract to the fullest extent that we can, is even going further than that. We may have a lot of items on contract, but we want to drive down to even more of a formulary-type management of just certain products that we would be using off that contract and using them consistently and in a standard way across our networks. So all of this, we believe, allows us to really do some dramatic things in improving care and really bring up kind of the back office functions, if you will, to match the clinical care side and hopefully begin to bring real information to our clinicians and help them in the analysis of, again, comparative effectiveness and more evidence-based approaches to understand the quality of products that really will get us into even bigger financial opportunities and quality opportunities in the future if we really know we're using the highest quality products in the service of our patients. So finally, we believe this is just so important, and as I started, I mentioned that we see this as a business imperative, not just a regulatory requirement. And about 2 years ago, when I first came to Kaiser Permanente, I was going out to a number of the conferences and trying to get to know some of my peers in other healthcare systems. A lot of the debate was around standardization and data standardization. Not a whole lot of progress had been made in the last number of years. And I've always been in healthcare manufacturing, so I'd been watching this from the sidelines as well. And was able to link up with a couple of like-minded healthcare systems such that we're really trying to create a voice in the industry. We know our industry needs to move faster, and we need to move really much, much quickly, more quickly to a standardized data system and an ability to manage that, but also enabling us to do other things in our supply chain. So we've formed this supply chain coalition. It's all voluntary. But we call it the Healthcare Transformation Group, and it's the top supply chain execs from each one of those healthcare systems and myself, and we have a couple of folks on our sub-teams that have been meeting on a regular basis over the last 2 years. And where we started, in order to enable any other kind of future discussions about how we can leverage supply chain to help our industry, it all starts with data standardization. So we've really gotten behind and are trying to link our collective powers to say we need our industry to move to UDI, to unique device identification, and to really get our suppliers to move that way, to get our other supply chain partners to move that way, such that even in the last 2 years, a year ago May, we brought our top 20 collective suppliers together in St. Louis, and we brought them together again this past May just to assess progress. And while good progress had been made on getting to GS1 compliant barcodes at the unit of use and transacting with GLNs and other standardized information, it wasn't enough. So we've even gone so far as to communicate to our suppliers that particularly for some of the more critical devices that we have out there is really no barcodes, no business. We believe in it so much to drive our business and to drive the efficiencies and improvements in our business that it's well beyond even just a regulatory requirement for us. So we've been working very closely together. We also, a number of projects are underway where we're involved in some of the FDA demonstration pilots around UDI and are very excited. We've even created an R&D or a research piece of the Healthcare Transformation Group that really is helping to try to figure out a path forward to how do we get more of the attribute data, how do we begin to pull more of the clinical information so that indeed comparative effectiveness and the rest can be done. So I think I'll stop there and just end with where I started on the 38%. So on the 38%, if indeed the suppliers that we've been working with and trying to influence are able to complete the plans that they've shown to us, we'll see that number increase dramatically in 2013. And it's really imperative that it does, because as we've told all of them, we just believe we can't afford to do business with suppliers and other partners who aren't able to transact with us in this way. It's just so critically important to our business that we just absolutely have to get there. So with that, I will close turn it over to Natalia to talk more about the clinical side of the house.
Laurel, thanks very much. Before we turn over to Natalia, we are going to be moving to the clinical perspective on tying some of the important back office issues and supply chains and systems issues that Laurel was just discussing, where UDI can have important benefits, and you know, not just for large healthcare systems, but for smaller practices that are facing a lot of the challenges of tracking inventory and making sure that they've got what they need for effective clinical practice. So we're going to turn to that in just a minute. Several of you have asked questions related to some of the basics of the UDI rule, and Jay Crowley from FDA is with us on the call, so we'll have some discussion of that at the end, but also want to let you know that the FDA does have some background information on unique device identification and the major documents and steps in this UDI regulatory process for implementation on its website. We will be posting those links on our website, and just want to make sure that you know that there's some good information on the background of the UDI rule available as well, and we want to get that to you too. So, Natalia, if you could go ahead with the clinical perspective.
Okay, Mark, can you hear me well?
Fine, thank you.
Okay, good. Hello, everyone. My focus is going to be the clinical perspective. And as mentioned in Mark's introduction, I co-direct the Health Sector Supply Chain Research Consortium in the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University. I'm also clinically trained, and I previously practiced internal medicine here in Phoenix. And I've been involved for, gosh, at least the last 2.5 years with UDI and really looking at the value of UDI across healthcare, but particularly focusing on the clinical value and the supply chain clinical integration surrounding that value. And also from an academic standpoint, involvement in research so that we can really generate data that can be, you know, broadly disseminated and really show both the clinical and business cases for UDI. Next slide. So the FDA's UDI rule and then manufacturers subsequently labeling devices with UDI really sets the foundation for use of UDI across healthcare in really these important areas, in operations, in financial, in clinical care, and in post-market surveillance. And I'm going to focus more on the clinical care and post-market surveillance aspects. And UDI really establishes a common language for medical devices and also allows that ability to track a device across its life cycle. And that really includes also tracking data on device performance after a device has been used in a patient. Next. So these are the five areas that I'm going to particularly focus on as we think of the clinical perspective. One is UDI as a standard to facilitate safe and accurate device use at the point of care. A second is UDI as a standard to document devices once they've been used in a patient. A third is UDI as a standard to facilitate recalls for devices once they've been used in a patient. And four, UDI is a standard to support post-market surveillance of medical devices. And lastly, UDI is a standard to support lower healthcare costs. Next. So when we look at the first area, UDI is a standard to facilitate safe and accurate device use at the point of care. What I really mean by that is the capability, and obviously using our full capabilities of information technology in healthcare, but to be able to scan the UDI of a device and the patient's wristband when we're going to use that device and get important information that really assures safety. That is, number one, assuring that that is a specified device per a physician's order. Number two, notification if a patient has a particular allergy and that particular device may contain that allergen, so you wouldn't want to use that, obviously. And also notification if a device has been recalled and may not have been removed from the patient care setting yet. So obviously very important information that you want to know before you use a device in a patient rather than after the fact. And I see this as very analogous to medication verification and administration at bedside. And there's been good research done looking at EMR systems or electronic medication administration record. And there was a very good study that I've referenced at the bottom of the slide that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2010. And the research group basically looked before and after institution of an EMR system in an academic medical center. And what they found was that there was a statistically significant reduction of medication error when the EMR system was used. So obviously this is in the pharmaceutical realm, and as we look at UDI and sort of a similar capability, we now are looking in the device realm and really working to reduce any medication errors and to optimize patient care and safety. Next. The second area is UDI as a standard to document devices that have been implanted in a patient, and I'm going to focus on implantable devices mainly because they're the higher-risk devices, and certainly what's critical is you don't want to find out 2 days from now after something's been implanted in a patient that it needs to be taken out. But right now, as we look across healthcare and we look across medical specialties, there's not a current standard process for documentation of that implantable device. It really differs between hospital systems. A barcode on the device packaging may be scanned at the point of care and may be captured in an OR electronic database. It may not necessarily connect to the clinical record. The device information may be entered manually. It may be entirely manual, or it may be partially manual, meaning that a circulating nurse or lab tech is keying that information in at some point during the case or during case closing. Product labels are still most generally put on sheets of paper, and a lot of times those are used to reconcile that what was entered in the electronic system and is also on the sheet for purposes of billing and also for clinical documentation. So there's just really not a consistent standard, and what physicians dictate or enter into their operative or procedure report also doesn't necessarily follow a standard format. Next. So I want to give you a couple examples in clinical areas, and there's certainly many examples, but I want to just, you know, focus on a couple to give you the idea that really at the point of care in the clinical realm, what's happening because of the current process that we have. When we look at orthopedic surgery, there's many patients at this point that have had hip or knee replacements. And in some cases, the patient will develop problems. They'll develop pain or some malalignment or whatever, and they'll have to have one or more of the components of that original implant removed, and hence a revision surgery. So as part of the preoperative planning, the surgeon wants to identify the components of that original implant. And that's obviously important to find out what do they need in the OR to replace during the revision surgery. And actually this past weekend I presented data from a project I did looking at exactly this issue, presented it at the American Association of Hip and Knee Surgeons annual meeting. And the bottom line is that orthopedic surgeons tend to use multiple methods to get this information, not just one method. They certainly face barriers of, number one, not being able to get the record, but once they do, that the information is not complete for what they need to know about the components of the original implant. And despite all their hard work, which can be quite time-consuming for the surgeon and their staff, they're about 10% of the time where they cannot get this information prior to going to surgery. So certainly the impact is a level of clinical inefficiency with their preoperative planning and really overall perioperative period. But a patient could have more extensive surgery. Next, please. And another area that's important to look at is interventional cardiology. Again, there's many patients who have stents currently, and there's times where they may restenose the stent. And they may present to an emergency room, and they generally have chest pain, and they may be hemodynamically unstable. The cardiologist who's available to care for them may know the patient, but also may not know the patient. So, again, the cardiologist wants to know, what is this stent the patient has? Is it a drug-eluting stent? Is it a bare metal stent? What's the diameter? What's the length? And this type of information without the standard format and standard place to document isn't always easy to get. So they may need to take the patient for additional imaging studies such as fluoroscopy or ultrasound. So really the impact of this is a time factor, which may be urgent circumstances. The patient isn't doing very well. The patient has to go off or have extra imaging, which adds time and certainly cost. And there's a level of clinical inefficiency and also stress, really, for the cardiologist. Next, please. And, you know, there's really many other procedures and implantable devices to consider that are both in class 2 and 3, and I've listed some of them here. But certainly there's great importance for a surgeon if they have to go in and do a revision or they have to do an emergency surgery that they very quickly can find out what exactly are the different devices that this patient has in their body. Next, please. So as we think of UDI and we think of an improved process in this arena, certainly the automated capture of UDI at the point of use and then connectivity of that to the electronic health record and that information being held in a set field is very important for clinical care. It really sets a standard for the documentation, a standard location of that information when it needs to be accessed for patient care reasons, certainly allows greater efficiency and error reduction. And this is actually another area that I'm just starting another project, really looking at the point of care and what is the amount of time that needs to be spent on documentation. You know, Laurel brought it up very nicely in her presentation. We really want physicians and clinical teams to be focused on the patients, not on other activities. So I'm really looking at how much time, what is the billing error, what's the clinical documentation error, et cetera, that's happening with the current process that we have. Next slide, please. So as we, the third area that I brought up was the standard to facilitate recalls for devices that have been implanted in patients. You know what, I think we might have missed a slide. If you could back up one, I'd appreciate it. Great, thanks. And so as mentioned already, without UDI and electronic health record as our standard, when we have a recall, the information absolutely floods hospitals and the physician providers. This comes from manufacturer corporate that there's been a recall. Additionally, the distributor reps and manufacturer reps are certainly informing the physician providers verbally about the recall. And finding all of the affected patients is often a manual and a very laborious process. So, again, as we think through to an improved process in this area, we're capturing in an automated fashion UDI at the point of use. We're storing that information in the electronic health record. We have a very clear link between that device and its use in a particular patient, and then a standard place of that documentation, which, you know, clinicians across the board could know that is where this information is held. Next slide, please. So this really sets up the ability to query your IT system using UDI and come up with a comprehensive list of all patients that have been affected by a recall device that has been implanted. So certainly more efficient and more safe for patient care. I also want to mention there's been a lot over the last, year and a half, or really even a couple years, looking at metal and metal hip implants. We've had a couple recalls, obviously a big recall in 2010 with the two of their hip systems. But again, these are type of devices that post-market studies have been ordered by the FDA. This is a group of patients that from a clinical standpoint need to be followed closely, may need to be part of a study. So again, if you're able to get UDIs of this whole sort of class of product or device, you can query your system and very proactively come up with a list of patients that you need to really follow or even see if they should be part of a study. Next, please. So the fourth area of great importance is UDI as the standard to support post-market surveillance of devices. And post-market surveillance is not one activity. It's many activities, such as adverse event reports, clinical registries, post-market studies, comparative effectiveness research, et cetera. And what these activities do is really monitor devices once they're out in the market, and they're used on many, many patients and many more than really could be studied in pre-market studies. And information that comes out of post-market surveillance on the performance of devices very much informs patient care, so very important from a clinical standpoint. Despite all of the good work in this arena, there are currently limitations. One of which is completeness and clarity of adverse event reports that go to the FDA. Another is our ability to use medical device data from electronic health records and claims data as we do for pharmaceuticals. Another is a lack of that standard for device data entry into clinical registries, such as cardiovascular registries, orthopedic registries, et cetera. And a lack of a standard identifier in data sets that are used for research. And lastly, a lack of that identifier to allow linking of data on devices between the FDA data systems, pre-market, post-market, et cetera. Next, please. So this graphic really is portraying once UDI is captured in the electronic health record at the patient care setting, really all the places that this information can flow and be used for clinical care. And I already touched on the left side the importance of information for device identification for patient care. On the right side with the blue bubbles, as patients move towards patient portals and personal health records, this allows flow of this information that includes the devices that they have in their body in their personal health records, so they can be proactive and have this information. And, of course, as we move forward with health IT and further ability to transfer information between different patient care settings, certainly device information is a very important part of that information. And as mentioned, various FDA initiatives, such as the FDA Sentinel system, population databases, research, post-market studies and comparative effectiveness, flow into clinical registries that then can be linked with other databases or like registries to create larger data sets that are available for research and evaluation. And much adverse event reporting comes out of the patient care setting and also clinical registries. And this may inform the need for a recall. And if there is a recall, this information comes back around to the patient care setting where you can query your system, determine what patients have been affected, and, of course, it informs patient care not to further use a particular device in a patient. Next, please. So, you know, as we look at UDI as the standard to support post-market surveillance of devices, there's really many benefits that ultimately will impact patient care. One is the use of UDI in adverse event reports. So we very comprehensively, we have a clear report and we're able to pull this data together and not lose some data because it's not clear and it's only partial data. The ability to use device information from electronic health record and claims data. UDI as that device identification in your clinical registries so that you may be able to link between registries. And, of course, in data sets, And as mentioned, that ability to link the FDA databases and also the potential to determine the need for recalls earlier. If we're able to link and create larger data sets, we may have enough information to find out this device is having some issues and really enough to inform the need for a recall. Next, please. So the last area I want to touch on is UDI as a standard to support lower healthcare cost. And there's really a number of areas where we think there may be impact on cost. One certainly is the support of improved efficiency in operations and the clinical arena. And I've certainly given some examples where physicians trying to get information and clinical teams in the OR trying to key in information or doing a manual process. This is really time that they could be more focused on clinical care. The second area is the ability to get enhanced data. I mean, data is so important as we move forward with new models of care, whether it's accountable care organization or bundled payments or co-management, and certainly that accountability for providing quality care, but also keeping healthcare costs low. We really need the data. So we need to really pull together a procedure, the device that was used, the cost, what were the outcomes, was this patient readmitted. We need some means when we're looking in the device arena of how we can pull all of this together. And certainly allowing improved data sets for both research and whether you're doing an internal registry as an organization or you're inputting data into an external national registry. So very important area to get that real-time enhanced data. And then another area I touched on earlier was that potential to determine the need for recall earlier. Again, if you have larger data sets, you're able to link various registries, whether they're international with our registries, you may find out earlier that something has to be recalled. So that product will be used in less patients, so less patients will be impacted, very important from a clinical standpoint. But also, recalls are very costly, and it would certainly add less cost to the system. Next, please. Before I wrap up, I want to just make sure you're aware of some of the ongoing work right now. Through the FDA's Medical Device Epidemiology Network, there's a whole stream of UDI work. And earlier in this webinar, Greg very nicely talked about what's going on at Brookings. Obviously, this webinar plus other workshops, et cetera. There's additionally a UDI coronary stent demonstration project ongoing with the use of UDI in the cath lab and also readying that information for post-market surveillance. There's UDI and orthopedics work ongoing right now, building a large data set of product attributes that could be very useful for clinical and research purposes. And also AstroD, which is really looking at an automated trigger of adverse event reporting using UDI in the electronic health record. I touched upon a couple studies I'm doing that's out of the MD-EpiNet stream of work, but also really focusing on orthopedics and very much trying to get information that can be broadly disseminated and really help support the clinical and business case for UDI. There's also been ongoing discussions with the Office of National Coordinator for Health IT, really discussing UDI and electronic health record as a stage three meaningful use criteria, and discussions with CMS about UDI and claims forms and link with reimbursement. So there's a lot of work ongoing, and I've referenced at the bottom of this slide in case you want to learn more about these areas. Next, please. So, in summary, the FDA's UDI rule, manufacturers assigning UDIs to their marketed devices, is going to set the foundation for use of UDI across healthcare. But really, to achieve that full value of UDI across healthcare, absolutely needs to be implementation and adoption of UDI for operations, for financial, for clinical, and for post-market surveillance purposes. Next, please. And I want to leave you with a few resources. I know Mark mentioned that they're going to post them on their website, and here's also some resources. But certainly two spots on the FDA website. One is UDI, and you can sign up for email alerts, and then also MD EpiNet, where you can sign up also for email alerts. And here's the website for the Brookings Institution UDI Implementation Workgroup. So thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, Laurel and Natalia, for your presentations. Those were excellent. At this point, we're going to go ahead and turn it to the audience to ask questions. And again, in order to ask questions, please use the chat box in the top right of your screen to go ahead and submit those questions through the webinar, and then I'll call on you individually. We do have quite a list of questions. The first person we go to is Dan O'Leary, then we'll go to somebody from an individual from Baxter Healthcare, and then Jay Crawley from FDA. There were a number of questions. We'll go to you third around specifically which device classes are exempt and which device classes are included in the rule. So if you could think about some of your answers to that. In order for me to call on you and for you to ask your question, you'll need to press *7 to unmute. So anybody in order to speak, you'll need to go ahead and press *7 to unmute your line. So I'll go straight to Dan O'Leary. Dan, if you press *7, please ask your question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
All
thank
right.
you.
So my question is that the UDI rule does not prescribe the electronic format for manufacturers, and so there is the concern that users will then have to have the ability to read any kind of method that a manufacturer may choose to implement, particularly over changing courses of years. So I'm worried about how this might impact users, and in particular, Kaiser Permanente talked about requiring GS1. So what might happen in that area?
So, Natalia or Laurel, do you guys, either of you, want to take a stab at that?
Yeah, I'll take a shot at it from our perspective, which I think does represent some of the views from the other healthcare providers as well. Is certainly, I think the format of the electronic information is important, and certainly we, in terms of the capture, so there's lots of different ways, right, to look at where data is at and how we'll get to it. As we look at the getting the capture at the point of care, we are focused on barcodes and linear barcodes, and we've made kind of comments on the rules to that effect as well, in the sense that obviously there's going to be evolving technologies, and we recognize that as we go forward. And I think that's where some of the standards bodies working with healthcare providers and the rest need to kind of figure out how we'll work that way through, because not all healthcare systems are going to be able to replace their barcode scanning system. Some don't even have some today, so maybe they can leapfrog. I'm sure RFID will come. But I think that's where we've got to work closely together to kind of say, how do we ultimately at least begin to get the benefit wheel turning, which to me starts at being able to capture the UDI when we use it. Now, certainly to be able to communicate it to the UDI database, I think there's a number of ways to do that. Under the regulation. So getting that item master created, I think, is not an easy task, if you will, but then actually capturing it throughout our supply chains and through our clinical practice, to me, is where we've really got to focus on, making sure that indeed the people who are going to be doing that have the technology to do it, and that we don't get too far ahead or too far behind to make that work. Definitely an important question. I wish we had all of the answers to it, but we're at least kind of saying we have, in many cases, linear barcode readers that we can deploy today. Obviously, we're looking at optical as we go forward as well. But I think we've got to not get too far out in front of what healthcare providers can actually deploy and help us capture the information with.
I want to add just one thing to that also is that, I think at this point there's a real level of education and understanding that needs to happen that's very basic, really even understanding when you look at a package. I mean, this is talking about a clinical team in an OR or cath lab and looking at a package and understanding what do I even scan, and really some basics with the barcode scanning technology that we have now. So I really do agree with Laurel's comments. We're starting at the beginning now with a real understanding of this whole concept, and then I think with time we'll be able to scale up to what's more advanced.
Great, thank you. Before I go to the individual from Baxter Healthcare, we have had a number of questions regarding today's presentation, and we will be posting the presentation materials, including the audio, on the Brookings website over the next few days. So be sure to check back in there for that information. So with that, I'll turn to an individual from Baxter Healthcare. Please press star 7 to unmute your line, and if you're on, go ahead and ask your question. Okay, so he may not be on the line, so I'll go ahead to Jay. Jay, are you ready for the homework that I gave you to prepare for? So a couple questions on which device classes are exempt and which order. Go ahead.
This is Baxter. Can you hear us now?
Oh. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, and then we'll go to Jay right after you. Thank you.
I was interested to know what data elements will be captured in the database to do the comparison of effectiveness and product surveillance.
So that question sounds like it might be for Jay, and I believe that was regarding the FDA's global UDI database. Jay, are you able to talk about some of that?
I'm sorry, that's a question for Kaiser Permanente. They're talking about creating a database for comparison in the first presentation.
Okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I'll take that one. So this is Laurel. So in terms of the vision, we do have a number of registries internal to KP today, as well as we support some others. So I'm certainly not the clinician in terms of all of the information that gets captured into those, and we certainly can provide more information. In terms of the vision slide that I showed, part of that is, I think, also to represent where we want to go to. We certainly don't have registries across all items, but we're also very active in the industry about how do we share more information amongst healthcare systems. And the question that you raise is an important one. We've been part of a UDI demonstration project about what key data attributes are, because that won't be in the global unique device identification database. And so getting the clinicians together to kind of agree on what some of those things are from an industry perspective certainly is no easy task, but we believe that that's work that really needs to be done in order to enable, fully enable that future in the forward. So as a quick answer, we do have internal registries that we manage and we analyze ourselves, and we even have some folks, Liz Paxton on the orthopedic side, who's working on a international a consortium of orthopedic registries as well, trying to kind of further advance that. And I know Natalia's had a lot of involvement across the board as well. So I don't know, Natalia, if you would add anything to that?
Yeah, what I wanted to add is obviously in the FDA's GUDID, there's a list of 10 or 12. And so size is an example of what's in there. But when you're thinking from a clinical standpoint, a research, a comparative effectiveness standpoint, at least when you're looking at orthopedics, you really want to get a lot deeper than that, and that's part of what is being built out through ICOR. But looking at length, looking at fixation, looking at trunnion or taper, looking at the materials, et cetera, et cetera. And that sort of extended database really, really is helpful for research. So it's really beyond what's currently going to be entered into the FDA's database. And also, I'm sure something similar is being built out for cardiology.
Okay, great. We do have a few minutes left, so I'd like to go ahead and turn to Jay. Jay, are you able to provide a few comments? So, Jay, again, just press star 7 to unmute your line.
All right. Sorry about that. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Good. Sometimes don't follow directions well. So the question, I think, was about which classes of device are subject to UDI. In general, all classes we have, for those who don't know, we have three pre-market risk classes of devices, class three being the highest risk, class two are moderate risk, and class one being low risk. And they are implemented in that way. So we have a phased implementation based on pre-market risk class. Class three, we're suggesting the proposed rule 1 year after publication of the final rule, and then class two, 3 years, and class one, 5 years. There are some exceptions or exemptions, as Mark mentioned earlier as well. They're kind of in the weeds a bit, but there are two in particular that I think people might find interesting. One, at least in the proposed rule, is that we're suggesting that over-the-counter devices would be exempt completely from the UDI rule. We have prescription devices, and we have over-the-counter devices, and we're suggesting that over-the-counter devices, which are typically sold at retail but can be distributed in healthcare institutions, would be exempt from the rule. The other probably important exemption is around production identifiers. So we have a device identifier, which is analogous, say, to an NDC code or UPC code, and identifies a particular manufacturer's product in a particular packaging configuration. And then we have production identifiers, which are lot numbers or expiration dates of particular products. And in the proposed rule, we suggest that Class 1 devices do not need to include the production identifiers in the UDI. They would still often be stamped on the label of the device, if you will, as you may see them today, but they would not be incorporated, for example, into a barcode, as they would for other classes of devices. So those are probably two of the most important exemptions. Otherwise, as I mentioned before, all devices would be subject to UDI.
Okay, great. Thanks, Jay. So the next question we have, an individual is Brent. I don't know your last name, but Brent, if you're on the line, you go ahead and press star 7 to unmute and then read your question. Thank you.
Hi, yes. This question, it would be for Kaiser, and just wondering if you think that healthcare organizations outside of some of the bigger ones that are using EMR, such as Epic, are able to even access the information collected with a UDI device throughout their hospital and healthcare organization?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the answer to that is probably even some of the mid-sized to smaller healthcare systems have the opportunity to get to some of this value perhaps even more quickly than us. We're very big, and to change things takes a bit of time and a lot of change management, if you will. So I think that the imperative thing is to take a look at where you need to capture this, because certainly there is some, looking at kind of the key areas, even ours, as we're looking at capturing point of use. We want to do it on a broad basis, but we're starting in some of the most important areas first, so say in the operating room or interventional radiology or cardiology. And when you look at the business case that's behind it, there's not, I won't say it's insignificant investments to deploy scanning technology to be able to capture it and then to integrate it into your electronic medical record. But that's also one of the pieces that the healthcare transformation group is looking at and seeing if there's some opportunities we have also to generate change within the industries. Can we work collectively with software providers so that these integrations become more standard in the future, so that it's not each one kind of having to do their own a lot of the heavy lifting, if you will, to get information, say, from a point-of-view system to an EMR or to integrate your point-of-use information back to your ERP system. So I would encourage kind of smaller, mid-sized systems to take a look at it, particularly when the supply chain benefits, I think, truly can show a very positive NPV. It does here, and we've made many investments in terms of the opportunities. And you may be able to get there even a little bit more quickly, if you will, if you've got greater flexibility and pick and choose kind of where you begin to do this.
Yeah, I want to add something to that also, and that's what I think is so critical about the work that, you know, Brookings is doing to really educate and move forward towards a roadmap with the healthcare transformation group is doing, certainly what's going to come out of some of the research, is to really start to, in all these places, build information and a roadmap that different size systems can really look at. Because what I found in the course of research and being down in the weeds in some cases of these hospitals, there are some pretty minor things that can be done that make a big difference. And really just understanding that, you know what, you can do this integration. It's not going to require a lot of budgeting. It's just sort of understanding what you have and to start small and in certain areas and build those connections. It's very possible, but I think that there needs to be education and continued discussion about this and sharing so that hospitals can start to move forward.
Okay, great. So we'll have time for just one more question. And the next individual on that list was Diana Up. Diana, if you're still on the line, please go ahead and read your question. And again, to press *7 to unmute your line.
Am I unmuted now?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
Thank you.
We have a lot of medical devices that have been that are being reprocessed, and in order to maintain the continuity, how is the hospital going to identify those devices so that when they go to the reprocessor, they are tracked through the system more accurately?
So that might be to Natalia, or?
Well, I would think that would be for Laurel.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so I think it's a combination one, we're going to kind of learn our way through some of this. Part of the UDI regulation is some direct marking requirements, if you will. So being able to track particularly things that are either reprocessed or lose their packaging very early in the process are things that we do need to try to address. So we definitely don't have all of the answers today, but it's one of those things that we'll need to address as we go forward and figure out kind of in those situations how we'll do that tracking. So I can't say definitively for you right now exactly what we'll do, but we do think UDI will help support that. Again, if we look at some of the requirements around direct marking and what have you. We also have heard from some suppliers that there are more innovative kinds of ways to track barcodes through this process. So I wish I had a more definitive answer, but it's one that we'll learn as we start kind of bringing up our full point-of-view scanning and beginning to get into some of these areas where it's a little bit trickier than, say, some of the one-time-use kind of disposable supplies.
Okay.
Okay, great. Well, I'd like to thank Laurel and Natalia for your presentations, and also Jay for being able to participate in well, and for all of you who were able to tune in for today's webinar. Again, presentation materials, including the audio, will be posted to the Brookings website over the next few days. And I'd also like to let you all know that we will be holding our next UDI webinar on January 14th, and that will take a look at the benefits of UDI implementation and specifically regarding the global UDI database for patients. We will be sending an announcement out for that over the coming weeks, so please keep an eye out for that. Again, thanks for participating this afternoon, and enjoy the rest of your day.